liable to the death penalty. Okay.
Jesus is praying.
Yeah. Let's say Sunday the 10th, Monday the 11th. Now is it Friday the 8th, or is it Friday the 15th, whatever it is?
No, it would be Friday just before. In other words, the 8th. You're right.
So
took place on Friday the 8th. But
healthy,
the Besdin had not yet met, right? Besdin had not yet met. And obviously we would have to say that the Besdin had not yet met, even when these guys came and they said that it happened on Sunday, and the verdict of the court had not yet been given on Sunday. We have a Gemara in the Sanhedrin. I assume that this is probably the reason why. The Gemara in the Sanhedrin says that if it is a capital case, then normally you don't judge the person, that is, you don't condemn a person to death the same day. Instead, if you see that the verdict is going to be not guilty, then in that case you don't have to wait, because it's always a mitzvah, lezakis, to try to declare the person innocent. Okay, so in that case, then that bo bayom, you could finish it. Okay, but what if you see that the way the judgment of the court is running right now, having heard the testimony, that the person deserves the death penalty, then in that case, malidin is hadin. In other words, you let it stay overnight, so that in the meantime, when they come together the following day, they have a chance to think over. Maybe they were wrong in their judgment or something like that, you see. So that they have another opportunity, in order to try to find a zuchus, justification, for the person who is accused of murder. Yes.
I just want to get this time sequence. I'm having a lot of trouble with this. In the simpler case, first set of witnesses, ones that are later determined to be aiding and dominating.
Yeah, or accused. Accused of making it of something.
Accused, right.
Yeah, okay, right.
They come and say that Phony killed Chaim or whatever on Sunday.
All right.
And then the second set come and say that they were with us on Sunday, and actually the murder took place on the following Monday.
Yes.
Correct? Okay.
Correct.
And in that case, what was the determination?
The determination is that these guys are Adam Zomimim, because the person who supposedly was dead was still alive and breathing. You understand? On the day that the first group came in and said that he was already a dead man.
Right.
Okay?
Understand.
You understand? He was not a Bar Katala at that particular time. He did not. Right. So because of that reason, this is the reason why, the judges have to determine that they came and they gave malicious testimony against the accused, because they wanted to see the accused put to death.
Right.
And so therefore it's kasher zomam, right? And therefore they would be condemned, because they are Adam Zomam.
And it's also easy to prove, because the witnesses can testify that the day before the false witnesses...
Correct, and on the day that they said, the other guys were still alive, right?
No, in the second case, what happened? The second case...
Okay, the second case that we have, the problem is not, when they said, that actually the murder took place on Friday. When the murder took place on Monday.
The agents only come and say that the murder took place on Friday.
Right. Let's take a look at the second statement. Right.
The second.
Boshdam yom bechad b'shabbat or yom right. Boshdam yom imoni is bechad b'shabbat or right. El betray b'shabbat or right. Plain is hadefish. Right. So far, so good. There was no problem with that. That we understood. But then along came below oath, and he says, and besides, I'll go one step further. Right. He says, el apilu omru erev Shabbos or
right.
Plain is hadefish.
Right. Okay.
All right. That the murder, the second group of witnesses, they say that murder took place on Friday.
Not on Sunday.
Not on Sunday.
Friday.
Took place on Friday.
Right.
Nevertheless, Neharogin, the Adam Zomimim are to be put to death. Why? The Be'idun the Komisad the Gavra Lav Bar Katolahu, because when they are testifying about the time that they saw it, in other words, on Sunday, the murderer was still not a bar katola. He still was not judged
as
that
a murderer
by the court and sentenced to death.
See, I have
so, okay.
Because he, if I get this correctly, let me just see if I understand this.
Yeah.
They allege that the murder took place on Sunday, but the second group alleges, and the judges believe that the murder actually took place 2 days previous.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
Shabbat.
Right. Right.
All right.
Don't kill
right.
Yeah, Erev Shabbat. We understand that. It's good.
Obviously, they're not going to meet on Shabbos.
Right.
Yeah, he said no one would
murder
on
Shabbat.
Wouldn't even occur to anyone to actually commit a
no,
murder.
No,
not with a milk knife.
All right. Exactly. Okay. Now,
okay.
Here's my point. Why, how can, I have trouble with this because the murder actually occurred on Erev Shabbat.
Right.
Therefore, in effect, the murderer.
Yeah.
Was a murderer, so how can the Sanhedrin come and say that he's not yet guilty because they didn't
he
judge
has
him
not
on
yet
Sunday?
Right.
He in effect
correct.
Is guilty.
Absolutely right.
This is a
but this is a technicality.
Understand.
Technicality is that
he hadn't been
unless the man has been convicted.
He hasn't been judged.
By the court. I mean, he may have been charged, but as I said, I mean, if they're going to. Let's say the court convenes on Sunday and then they still didn't make any determination until Monday. So when these guys came and they said that on Sunday, you know, they saw the murder committed, and the second group of witnesses said, look, on Sunday you were together with us.
Well, that's the first issue.
Yeah, right, 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 right. So in that particular case, nevertheless, because the court has not yet convicted the man of murder and sentenced him to that, right? So therefore, we have to assume that this first group, you know, who are being accused of being Eder Zomimin, they're doing it out of maliciousness, not because they are testifying to something that they saw.
I, you know, see, my, the reason I would see their guilt is because they already would have known. I mean, this is really what you would call a bald-faced crime. They would have known that the murder was committed by someone else.
Yeah.
Erev Shabbat. And then they come after that on Sunday, say it was committed by somebody else. That really is even worse than the previous example.
All right.
But I don't understand why the Beit Din would say...
Before I get to some of these issues, try to understand it in the next segment.
Okay, maybe you're right.
Okay.
So what does Bar Katala mean?
Bar Katala means that the accused, not talking about Adam Zomim, but the person accused of murder has not yet been sentenced to death.
So he hasn't been sentenced to death.
Once he's sentenced to death, you see, they didn't waste too much time, you know, with appeals, although there is always a possibility. But as the Gemara explains it in Sanhedrin, you know, what happened after Nigmar Hadin? Case was over, okay, and the verdict was finally given. After all the, you know, the arguing back and forth and so on, the vote was taken and so on and so forth, and it had to be more than a simple majority of judges, you know, because according to the law, there had to be at least, let's say, in the court of 23, so you had to have at least, 13 versus 11 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
13 versus 10 or something like that. Yeah.
Bar Katala means he's tried but not sentenced.
Right.
So he has been tried, he hasn't been sentenced.
No, that's correct.
Bar Katala has been sentenced, hasn't been executed yet.
It has been executed
yet.
Okay,
so has been
because
sentenced.
What is
but
I saying?
Has
right.
To, he has been sentenced.
There's
right.
Been a Gazardine,
that's
right.
A Bar Katala.
Yeah.
He has
okay,
been
he has,
after,
okay, just the waiting
right.
Execution.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
After they determine that the man should be executed.
Okay.
So then, you know, there's a whole description yet. I mean, it's not finished yet.
Yeah.
They take him to the place of execution, but they have people ready with swift horses and so on, and with all kinds of signals, flags, etc., etc., in case,
the garden and cowardly,
you know,
yeah.
they change or there's new evidence
yes,
or something
yeah.
like that,
mm-hmm.
that they could reverse it and spare the life of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But they didn't, put the accused into prison for 10 years of his life
mm-hmm.
before they finally got around to
yeah.
executing
okay.
him.
At any rate, the accused was guilty. When it was done, that's all.
Right, exactly. But the point is, right, Zomimim would have to be, you know, that they accuse falsely, and besides, a second group of witnesses can call their falsity to account by saying, how could you even give testimony when you were together with us?
Right.
Because as we said in the first part of the Mishnah, that if they simply testify and they say, you know, that we saw the murder take place on this and this time, right? Or we saw that so-and-so was a murderer, and the second group of witnesses come along and said that how could you testify when the murderer or the murdered was together with us at the time that you claim, we said that they're not Zimmerman yet. They're not Einel Zimmerman. This is what the first part of the Mishnah is saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this is the situation right now. But I agree. I mean, it's very difficult to understand this part. I mean, the other one we can understand easily enough. They testified to something that hasn't yet taken place. But, you know, to something that has taken place, so we have to say that's because of the court system, that a person is considered innocent until the time that he's proved guilty.
That's in America.
Yeah, but obviously, in the case of murder, as I said before, mm-hmm. they look for every single excuse in order to find merit for him.
So he's immediately guilty, and then we have to find him innocent, is what happens in the Jewish system, isn't it? Not innocent and until proven
guilty.
If we accuse him, then he's assumed to be guilty until we're discredited.
Witnesses have to come. The witnesses are going to be given the third degree in order to find out, you know, did it really happen? What did you say? Under what circumstances? And so on and so forth. I mean,
unless
the
witnesses are discredited, then he's guilty.
If the judge has determined so, you still need the judgment of the court.
Okay, but I'm just saying that
I mean, the Dayanim have to, they have to weigh the evidence and weigh all the testimony and so on before they can come.
The same arbitrary interpretation of our court system.
Yeah.
Unless the witnesses are repudiated, O.J. is guilty. I mean, that's not the way it is. Until there's a rule,
He's accused, but he isn't guilty.
Okay.
You know, there's a presumption of guilt. Perhaps that's
right.
What you're saying.
Yeah. Lead to his execution, unless he can actually prove the case.
One that preserves innocence.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the Jewish law has a presumption of guilt.
But we said, I keep on saying that they are mahapech b'schut, as we would say to you. In other words, they turn every stone over in order to try to find merit for the person who is accused.
Okay,
they're constantly doing it, and that's why they're very strict. I mean, they're not. We're going to find a famous passage a little bit later on in Marcos about if a court actually sentences a person to the death penalty. How often is it? It's considered a murderer's court. Very famous passage. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
So Maika Mashmalon. So now he says, what is the meaning, you know, of this new business that has been added, right? Namely about the second statement. Okay. So he says, Tanino, we've learned. So he says, Lepichach, therefore, Nimseis Achas Mehem Zomemes. If one group, I mean, this is why it suddenly switched to the feminine, because talking about Kat, like a group of witnesses. Okay. All right, if one group of them is found to be Zomemes.
If one of a pair?
No.
No?
No, because then it would be Nimso Echod Mehem, something like that, Zomem, or something like that. I mean, the language is not that. You have to go on the basis of Nimseh Sachas Behen Zomemes, right? That if one of these groups of witnesses is discovered, in other words, the court is now convinced that they are Zomemim, then guess what? Who? The Hein Erogen. Then both he, meaning who? The accused. As well as they, meaning, you know, those who have been judged to be Zomemim, they're all executed. The Hashniyah Petura. But the second group is not. course, even that itself is already a little bit difficult because, you know, what second group are they talking about? If we talk about the second group that came along to say that they were Zemimim, so why does she say Petura? I don't understand that. I'm a little bit puzzled by the language over here.
I understand.
Here,
yeah,
okay.
Petura means an exemption.
Yeah, normally, I mean, Potter means that exactly.
Could it be the Monday, the Sunday death rather than the Friday death? The second situation?
It's a different case.
Okay.
I think the term means exempt.
The remaining exempt. Witnesses that testify
to
the crime.
Yeah, exempt. They're set free.
Exempt
from, right.
It says there, the second setter is exempt from any punishment.
Right.
Okay, so is this the season?
And I don't think that what he's talking about over here is necessarily what we had before, and maybe it is. Maybe because, remember, if you had the last part of the Mishnah, it spoke about, you know, that other groups come along, right?
Okay,
which we gave to different interpretations last week. One, that of Rashi, and the other one actually happened to be the Ramban. Not the Ramban. Ramban happens to agree with Rashi. But the Ramban, where the Rashi takes it in the sense that, you know, one group after another comes and they repeat the testimony, and those who said that the first group were a bunch of Zimmerman, they get up and they say, you're also Zimmerman. You're also Zimmerman because you were together with us and so on and so forth. Until it reaches a point where it looks like it's a conspiracy.
Okay.
And this is why the Ramban had a different interpretation, that he said it's one group cancels out another group, and then the third group cancels out another group, and so on and so forth. Or, you know.
So what they're saying here is they only execute the first two Zomim instead of
right,
the 19
right,
or whatever.
Right. This would be the interpretation over here.
Are they talking about that kind of case?
Well, maybe they are. Maybe they are. I took it differently, but it's possible.
I take it with Michael that this year they've gone away from that.
This is the case. It's a Mishnah.
Yeah.
It's the next Mishnah.
It's about the Mishnah,
Two watching from one window, a pair from one window, a pair from another window.
Well, that's already a different problem, right?
This is the Mishnah we're quoting according to the Mishnah Shas, right? And so there are three pairs. Two observing from separate vantage points, and a third offering the obligatory warning to the criminal. Bisman Shura, okay, can skip a little bit, and then because Lefirach and Nimsas Achas Man Zomemes, if one of the two pairs becomes a Zomem, who behein erogin, the criminal and the impeached witnesses are executed.
Right, yeah, they are executed. This is correct.
Bashnia Petura and the remaining pair of witnesses.
All right, let's take a look at the Rashi for a second. I mean, Rashi more or less is saying, you know, what how we've been understanding it over there, okay? Says below, because that's the thing over there, you know. The other part, there's no difficult to understand. It says below, and in addition, he says.
Mm-hmm.
You see the low old?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
okay. It says,
Sha'afal
P, Sha'ilu Achroinim, Achrimis, Asman, Gemar Din. That even though the last group of witnesses come and they say that the actual time of the completion of the judgment against the murderer, right, is a day later than the others, right? But nevertheless, this second group of witnesses agree, you know, that when the Zomimim came, the Hoid Olov, to give testimony against the accused, right? Against the accused murderer. But Shlishi B'Shabbos on Tuesday. So this is how Rashi takes it, that actually the case, you know, it may have started on Monday, but it went over. And finally the Gemar Din is going to be on Tuesday, right? So Kevar Hoyo Dino Nigmar Mies. Well, nevertheless, the case, I mean, the murderer, his trial had already come to a conclusion on Monday. Okay. The Gabra Katila Ashud, and they were giving testimony about a person who was already condemned to death. And that we'll see in a few moments, if not this week, we'll see it next week.
We have 10 minutes.
That if the guy is already a person who is, you know, deemed, you know, sentenced to death, then in that particular case, then the Eden Zomim, we don't accept their testimony. They have nothing more to add to the case. You understand? So that this is where the difficulty comes. Right. Yeah. Right.
Next page.
All right. So anyway, in the meantime, let's continue a little bit until it's time for us to be done. Mincha over here. Right. It says Isarichale, right? I need it for a case. Yeah. Wait, I skipped something.
Yeah,
all right. Okay. So Uvehine Rogan, as we already said, both the person who has been sentenced to death and also those who have been judged, Edim Zomimim, they are put to death. The Hashniya, but the second group of witnesses who came is Petura.
Right.
They're free. So, Seifa, then what do you do now with the last part of the statement that they're now quoting? Okay? Happens to be from Gemara and Tesvus and so on. Okay. So it says, Marsha Ein Kein Digmar Din. And this does not apply once the final judgment is given. As we'll see, it could lead to a tragic consequence as well. I mean, with all the safeguards, but sometimes, unfortunately, an innocent person could also be put to death. Yeah. So it says, Istarichale. It says, we need it for the following case. Boishnayim. What if two people came, right, Biyamru, and they said, Bechad b'Shabbat nigmar dino shel poni, right? They say that on Sunday, this person was condemned by the court to death, right? The verdict that the court was given, okay? Uvo shnayim, and another two guys came along, right? Biyamru, and they say, Bechad b'Shabbat imonim ha'yisem, right? You were together with us on Sunday, so how could you even testify that you know you were in the court and you saw, that the court sentenced him to death on Sunday when you were with us in a different place altogether? So, Erla, but rather there, Shabbos Nigmar Dino Shoploni, right? That the actual guilty verdict given by the court was already given Erev Shabbos. And not only that, Ela Apilo Omru, even if they say Betrei B'Shabbat, Nigmar Dino Shoploni, right? If they say that on Monday, that's when the court finally sentenced the guy to death, right? So Ein Elu Ne'erogim. Then these people, that is, those who are accused of being Edim Zomim, they're not going to be put to death because they're not considered real Edim Zomim. Why? Because concerning the time in which they give their testimony, at that particular time, Gavra Bar Katolahu, the man was already sentenced to death. Okay.
But what is the false witness? It's not accusing anyone of a crime. It's only
they're accusing that they claim that they saw him judged by the court on this and this day, so that they are giving false testimony because the second group come along and they say, what? He was adjudged guilty when? Erev Shabbos. Or he was adjudged guilty on, let's say, Tuesday or something like that. You understand? Or on Monday. So in that case, they are giving testimony about something that they hadn't seen. So therefore, they should be considered Edim Zomimim, right? But because this person had already been condemned to death, so their testimony then now has no effect.
What effect would it have?
If the guy had escaped, okay, and they say this is a criminal on the run. In fact, he was sentenced to death on Sunday. Then that might have to be less bad.
Yeah, that's a possibility. It's a possibility, right? Now they make comparison between what we said over here and also the chenlin and tashlumi knas, and likewise it says a similar principle can be considered in regards to the payment of knas. Now, as we've already defined knas means a special penalty that the Torah decrees, which is not the usual monetary penalty. Okay, as for example, we said in case of the man who accuses his wife, that he accuses that he married a woman and he says that she wasn't a virgin, okay? And it's proved, that he's a liar. And in that case, part of the penalty is that he has to give her father 100 silver pieces. Or, as we said, for example, in the case of the difference between a tam and a muad, an animal which is tam, in other words, it's considered an animal which doesn't go around normally injuring people, and let's say that it did injure someone, so in that case, instead of paying the full amount of the damages, then there is a special thing that they pay only chatzi nezik, they pay only half the damages, okay? And there are some other things like that too, okay? Where it's not according to the actual monetary damage, but the Torah is given an arbitrary figure, something like that. So this is a knas, okay? And earlier too, we had an opinion saying that Adam Zilberman, this too is like a knas, which the Torah has made a special penalty for those who give false witness knowingly and threaten, you know, against somebody, okay? Alright, so the chenli nintashlu mekas. Bo shdayim, two people come and they say, the yomru, v'chad b'shabato gonav v'tova humocha, that on Sunday this guy either he stole or he slaughtered, right, or he sold. Now naturally these are knasim. Why? Because in the case of a person who steals, the Torah says what? Shnayim yishalim. He has to pay a twofold amount. Okay, he has to pay double the amount. So in that particular case, that's a knas, because he's not simply paying back what he stole, but he's being penalized in addition that he has to pay an equal amount. Okay? Or in the case of the man who stole, let's say, either an ox or a sheep. And then what did he do with the ox or the sheep? Either he butchered it, or he sold it to somebody else and he can't recover it. You understand? So in that case, there's a special penalty for that. You know, if he was caught with the sheep, you understand? Or with the ox, and in that case, it would be shnayim yishalim. Okay? But in this particular case, the Torah gives an additional penalty, that in the case of the ox, he has to pay fivefold. And in the case of the sheep, he has to pay fourfold. Okay? The reason why, according to the Gemara, this is so, is because the ox works hard for the master, and therefore he's worth more. Whereas the sheep, you know, he eats, he grows his he grows his wool and so on and so forth, but he's not working as hard as the ox has to work. So that's the reason for the difference between the ox and the sheep. Okay.
But also the other drasha is that man who steals the sheep humiliates himself by carrying the sheep on his back.
Yeah.
So that makes it worth less.
Okay, yes, that's true. That's also another Madomar. Yeah. Okay. All right, so this is the situation. All right, so they say anyway that they saw this take place on Sunday, right? Of those time, along come two other witnesses, v'yomru b'chad b'shabbato imonu hayisem, right? That how could you give such testimony when you were together with us on Sunday? Elo b'trei b'shabbato gonav v'machu v'chadishon. But, you know, what you're testifying to actually really did take place on Monday. So in that case, what? Mishalman, right? They have to pay, because when they gave their testimony and the thing had not yet taken place, then obviously they were guilty of being Adam Zilberman. So whatever, you know, would have been the case, they would have been sentenced, you know, to pay back that amount, whether it's four sheep, five oxen, or two, whatever it may be, and so they will have to pay that. Okay? Hello, the law owed, not only that, but go one step further, he says, Hello, filu omru, even if they said their Shabbos gona v'tova chumocha, right? That actually the ganeva, you know, the theft, or the slaughtering of the animal, or the sale of the animal so that you can't recover it anymore, this took place erev Shabbos, right? Mishalman, they still have to pay. Why? Dibeidno de komisade, gavra lav ba'al tashlumin hu. Because the date that they claimed that they saw it happen, the man had not yet been sentenced by the court to pay back. That is, you know, the ganav had not yet been sentenced by the court to pay. So in other words, they were still testifying against someone who is technically innocent. Okay? So they have to pay. Bo shnayim, and what if another set of witnesses come along, Beyomru b'chad b'shabbato, gona v'tovach mocha, right? And they give a similar testimony, namely that on Sunday, you know, the guy stole or slaughtered, whatever it may be, sold the animal, the nigmar, do you know? And on Sunday, the court actually made its verdict already, that the ganav taki was guilty of this. And then along come two guys, v'yomru, and they say, b'chad b'shabbato imanu heyisem, right? You were together with us on Sunday. They came and they gave this testimony, right? You can say the original group said it took place on Sunday, right? So along comes group two of witnesses and they say, hey, you were together with us on Sunday. Ela Erev Shabbos gonav v'tochav mocha nigmar dino. But rather, the guy was caught. He committed the act and he was caught and he was already sentenced by the court on Friday, right? And not only that, Elo Afilu Omru Bechad Beshabato Gona Betop Mochar, right? Even if they say that this happened, you know, on Sunday, Ubetrei Beshabato, and on Monday, Nigmar, you know, the court reached its verdict, Ein Mishalman, they do not pay. Why? The Beidon, the Kovisad, they govern Batashalman, because at the time that they are testifying, naming about Sunday, then he had already been judged by the court, even if not actually sentenced yet, that he definitely owes the money for his theft and so on. So in that case, then they don't get it. So it's all a matter of time, as we see, and what the nature of the testimony is. Okay, so Mirza Hashem, next week we shall continue from the top of the next page. And we'll again determine what is istatis.
Is it the way Rashi says, or is it according to the Greek?
August 9th.
What is the Greek again? In Greek would be sort of like, as we said before, in Greek it would be somebody, you know, who stands as part of a group. And but Rashi takes it rather from the Aramaic, where the word, I mean, the Aramaic word is related also to the Hebrew word. So the Hebrew word, of course, would be, for example, the sota. What is the soto? This is the woman who departs from the right way, okay? And therefore, in the Hebrew, for example, stiya, another noun that comes from the same root, would mean, you know, that you're diverted, you go to the side instead of going straight, or something like that. And this is how Rashi understands it, that he takes it in the form of satya. In other words, these are people who have gone away, they've strayed from the path of righteousness. Okay. All right. Now, if you remember, the end of the Mishnah on page Hey Omid Aleph said at that particular time that Rabbi Yehuda Omer, that Rabbi Yehuda says, you know, this is in reference to where group after group after group of witnesses come. So he says, istatisi. He says, as far as he's concerned, this is a conspiracy. And if this is a conspiracy, then in that case, only the first group who had been challenged and declared to be Edom Zomimin, they're the only ones to suffer the death penalty. But any subsequent groups who come along would not suffer. This is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. It does not agree with how the Rambam, for example, later on decided it. He decided in accordance with the Chachamim. But Rabbi Yehuda had some good reasons for it. Okay, and this is what we're going to analyze right now on the top of Daf Hey Omid Beis. He says, "He is not as he." Yeah, Gemara says as follows: that if these guys are really involved in a conspiracy, is it the Huzi, right? Then in that case, it says, "Afilu katri shoyna nami loy." Okay, then in that case, according to Rabbi Yehuda, then even the first set of witnesses who were declared to be Edom Zomimin, they should not have been punished either. Because if we say that the Edom Zomimin, you know, that the second group of Edom will come along and they challenge every single group of Edom who come along, and they say they're no good, they're Edom Zomimin, etc., etc., etc. So why should the first group then be singled out that they should be punished? And, you know, not the rest. So this is really difficult to explain. So this is what they're trying to give an answer to. So Amar Rabba Bohu said that the case is as follows. Shekodmu v'horgu. In other words, the death penalty had already been imposed upon the first group of Adam's enemy, okay? Had already been imposed upon them. And in that case, what is the philosophy? By the Hava, Hava. What happened, happened, and you're not going to undo it, you know, by there's nothing you can do. You can't come back to life again, okay? And as Rashi adds over there, it says, so therefore, why do we have to learn that only the first group is punished? Because if it happened, it happened. So what is the relevance right now? So Rava comes up with a different explanation. Okay, come on. This is what Rava says.
Rashi learns my Dehav Hav is a question.
Yeah. In other words, why is it necessary even to teach Elokat Rishonah? That's exactly what Rashi is saying, right? Because if it happened, it happened. So, what's the relevance, right? What's the relevance? Exactly.
It's not this. Rebbe Bo is not.
Yeah. Right. So that's why Rebbe comes up with a different explanation. He says, "Hochi Kama." This is what he says. Im Eino Elokat Achas Neheregas. He says that if there is only one group of witnesses against whom they testify, you know, that they are Eden Zomimim, then in that case, that group is put to death because, you know, they said that so-and-so had committed murder. But if there are more than one, then Eine Rogin, right, then even the first group of witnesses should not be. Or, let's say that the subsequent ones. But the problem is that the Mishnah says Ho Bilvad Ko'amar. Mishnah says only the first group of witnesses is what Rabbi Yehuda said. So they say Kasha. Taka, we don't really have an answer for this particular question. Yeah, because say Bilvad only, so it implies Rashi says Mashma Sheyeshar Acheres, that there are other witnesses, other group of witnesses who come. So there is no answer to that. So now they come up with another case of what looks like a conspiracy, only this time it doesn't involve the death penalty. So they tell the story about Hayi. So there was a certain woman, Da'asai Sahadeh, that she brought witnesses, okay, the Ishtakur, and they were proved to be shakron, liars, okay? They were declared to be liars. Aisa Sahadeh, so she brought another group of witnesses, the Ishtakur. And they were also declared to be liars. Okay? Omar Resh Lakish. So Resh Lakish says,
I skipped the line.
Pardon me. Right. So then you're right. Okay. So Oslo, then she went, and Isis Sada Achrinin, she brought other witnesses. This is already a third group, right? Delo Ishtaka. And this time, the last group of witnesses was not declared to be false witnesses. So, Omar Resh Lakish, felt as follows. He said, Uksakazu, this woman, he says, has a chazakah. So she's already established a pattern that she's bringing false witnesses.
This is warning for
right.
David isn't here, so.
Oy vey. We forgot our legal interpreter. So Homalei Rabbi Elazar, so Rabbi Elazar said to him, to Resh Lakish, he said to him, "Im he huksakah, look, if she was, she's suspected of, proven to be the kind of a person who's always bringing false witnesses, but kol Yisrael mi huksaku, are you going to say that every Jew who she should bring as a witness is automatically a liar? Are you going to make such charges against, kosher Eden?" There are witnesses who could come independently of all this and still testify according to what she said. So, Zimnin, certain time. David, you're too late. This woman has already established a chazaka that she brings false witnesses. Yeah, and therefore, we shouldn't pay any attention to what these witnesses are testifying, even though they were not challenged. The last group was not challenged. Okay. But, you understand? But Rabbi Elazar feels differently, he says. And you're going to say that all Israel, right? He says, you're going to say, Kol Yisrael mihosuku? Are you going to say that every Jew is automatically has a chapitah? a chazaka of being of a false witness. In other words, these witnesses could be completely independent of her pattern and be testifying correctly. Yes.
No. I'm just.
All right. So the Gemara now continues. All right. So Zimnim. So another time it says Avi Yasvi Kamed Rabbi Yochanan. So these two, in other words, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Elazar, they happen to be sitting before Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, in other words, was their teacher. Okay. They were his disciples. Of course, famous stories in Gemara about Reish Lakish. It was Rabbi Yochanan, who converted, so to speak, Reish Lakish from being a ganav, right, the brigand, and he made him into a Talmud Chacham instead. And of course, as a reward, for doing that, he gave Reish Lakish his daughter in marriage, and she was a very beautiful daughter. So he was a disciple of Rabbi Yochanan. At the same time, if he felt like disagreeing with Rabbi Yochanan, he disagreed with him too. Okay, so at any rate, they were sitting in the presence of Rabbi Yochanan, and also Kihai Maisa Kamaiho, and a case similar to this happened to come up before their bezdin over there. So Omar Reish Lakish. So Reish Lakish said, look, Husakazu, this woman, she already has a chazaka, for bringing false witnesses. So Omar le Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said to him this time, before, of course, it was Rabbi Elazar, this time it's Rabbi Yochanan. He says, Yim Husakazu, call Yisrael mi Husaku. If this woman is declared that she has a chazaka for bringing false witnesses, but you're going to say that for all Israel, that they have a chazaka for being false in their testimony? So Hador, he turned around in Chazay le Rabbi Elazar Bishus. And so what happened? So Reish Lakish turned around and he gave Rabbi Elazar a dirty look. Bish, it's like evil, okay? Bishus. He gave him a dirty look. Omale, and he said to him, Shemat bilim bat papcho, avalei amritli mishmei, said to him, you heard this statement previously from Bar Napcho, because who was Rabbi Yochanan? Who was Rabbi Yochanan? Bar Napcho. In other words, he was the son of a blacksmith or something like that. Okay, although of course it could be named his father. Yes. So he says, look, you heard this already from Yochanan Bar Napcho, and you never told me this in his name. He's angry first of all, Rabbi Elazar makes a statement as if it is what? It's his own, right?
Oh, his own, yeah.
It's his own statement. Whereas, here actually he had heard it from Rabbi Yochanan, who after all, Reish Lakish also, as I said, looked up to and who was related to by, he was the son-in-law of Rabbi Yochanan and so on. So he says, you heard it in his name and you didn't say anything? So Lemor Reish Lakish. All right. Now the Gemara continues and says, all right. So let us, in analyzing, say that maybe Reish Lakish, the Omar to Rabbi Yehuda, that Reish Lakish agrees with Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yochanan, the Omar to Rabbanan, whereas Rabbi Yochanan agrees with the Rabbanan, namely what about how many sets of witnesses, for example, would be liable to the death penalty, that the Rabbanan say that all of them would be, even though Rabbi Yehuda, objected and said it's a conspiracy, so how could you, only the first set of witnesses should be, right? And so therefore we would say that Reish Lakish is in agreement with Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yochanan is in agreement with the Rabbanan. So it's not so, says Reish Lakish. Omer lecho Reish Lakish, so Reish Lakish says, no, not so. Ano de amri lecho, when I gave you my opinion, namely that this woman has already a chazaka and therefore we shouldn't believe any of the witnesses, right? So he says, Afilu Rabbana. Maybe the rabbis too, they are in agreement with my point of view that, when you can see a pattern established, then in that case, then in that case, you should only punish one and not the others. But ad kan leko amri rabbonon hasam deleko dekoma hader. In the case of the first witnesses, you know, where they were executed, so in that case the rabbonon said, well, look, there's nothing more that you can do, because how are you going to bring back dead witnesses, right? I mean, they're already executed, so there's nothing you can do. Okay? But Abol Hocha, in this case, the case of the woman, for example, Ikaho de Komahadra, we have somebody who seems to be always on the lookout in order to try to bring in witnesses, right? And apparently, as Rashi says, you know, the Komahadra, that she's going around making the rounds, the Vakesh for this Koride Sheka, that she's trying to hire false witnesses on her behalf. Okay? Rabbi Yochanan, Omar Lecho, and Rabbi Yochanan could argue the following way. He says, Omar Lecho, he could say to you, Anu de Yamri Afil Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe I'm in agreement, he says, with Rabbi Yehuda in general, but Ad Kan, Lekoma Rabbi Yehuda, Hosam, Daminan Atu Kuleyalmo, Gabe Hani Habakayoma. We could say that in the case where Rabbi Yehuda said that this is status, remember, it's a conspiracy. Why is it a conspiracy? It's a conspiracy because how could you have so many witnesses, all of whom are challenged by one group of witnesses, right? And what were the witnesses saying, after all? What did we learn? That if they want to declare that the other guys are in Zomim, what do they say? Time. So, if you're going to have 100 sets of witnesses, what kind of a room, for example, are you going to have, you know, where 100 sets of witnesses all are together with, you know, the two of them? So that, therefore, this is the reason why in that particular case, you know, he would be inclined to agree with Rabbi Yehuda, right? Aval Hocha, but in the case of this woman who brought how many sets of witnesses? She brought three that we know, right? The first two we declared they were shakran. Along came another group and they were not challenged. So, why? So he says, Hochan, this particular case, he says, Hane Yadavisad Dusa, the Hane Le Yadavisad Dusa. In other words, we have to assume that the last group knew what they were testifying about. In other words, they testified correctly because they saw the event and they knew what they were testifying about. Whereas the Hani, the other guys, you know, those who were challenged and declared to be Yedei Sheker, right? Zimmerman, so on. So he says, in this case it was Yedei Sheker because we're not dealing with Zimmerman at this point, but we're dealing with false witnesses, okay? But, you know, the others, they didn't see it, and so therefore, how could they testify? I mean, obviously, they had to be false. Okay? All right, we'll just take a look at a little bit of the Rashi for those things that we hadn't had a chance to look at before. All right, I've already explained the first two Rashis that we had over there. So, Ishtakur. What is Ishtakur? Of course, it means, you know, that they were declared to be false. In other words, when the Bezdin began to question them and ask them all kinds of particular details, so they contradicted each other. So we know, you know, that they were not giving correct testimony. Now, Huxetor Zu, this woman has been declared that she has a chazoka, what? Lahovi Edesheka, right? That she brings false witnesses. The Lone Kabil owed Edus Acheris, and therefore, said Reish Lakish, let's not accept any other witnesses, you know, that she's going to bring, right? So along came, of course, Rabbi Elazar, and he said, Imhi Huxaka, Lechazar Acherehem, if she has this chazaka, this presumption that she's going to look for false witnesses, but nevertheless, call Yisrael Mi Huxaku, Lishmo Allah, will we say that all other Jews, do they have a chazaka that they are obeying her? Shetachzik esvachem kishkarim or kishakorim or something like that. In other words, that we should declare that all the others are to be considered false witnesses. Okay, we cannot make such a presumption, says Rabbi Elazar. But of course, now we have gone over to the Gemara, we know that actually the statement was originally whose? It's Rabbi Yochanan. Okay. Zimnim says Pamacher, it's another time, right? So, you know, then the Reish Lakish and the Rabbi Elazar were there. So, Hoda Chatzei, the Rabbi Elazar Bishop. So, Reish Lakish gave him a dirty look at Rabbi Elazar. And Rashi explains, Hesi Reish Lakish Esponov, that he turned his face towards him. Gnis Takil, the Rabbi Elazar, Bifonim Zoaphos, with an angry expression. Shehaven Reish Lakish, because Reish Lakish realized, he understood now, Sheshoma Rabbi Elazar Dovas MP Rabbi Yochanan. Uchshe Amor Aloy Le Amor Rabishmai. And when he gave this opinion, he did not give this opinion in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Of course, I don't have to tell you. We have it in Hirkei Avos. Parak it says, Omer Dovo Bishem Omro. Maybe Giyud Olirna, that if a person will say something that he heard in the name of the person who said it, then he will bring redemption to the world. In other words, look how important it is that if you know who said it, you should quote that person and give credit to the person, okay? And of course, it's based on an event, you know, that you had in the Megillah Esther. What does it say over there? The proof, Pasuk, you know, that he brings is Vatemer Esther Vamelech Bishem Mordechai. Esther, Queen Esther, right, said, you know, told about the conspiracy of Bigson and Teresh, which Mordechai had overheard, and she said it, not in her own name, but she said it in the name of Mordechai. And therefore, of course, later on, when the king was unable to sleep at night, and he had whoever it was, you know, read the Book of Chronicles before him, and he discovered, you know, that Mordechai had saved his life, and you know, and he wanted to know what should he do in order to reward Mordechai. For this was the Tchilas HaGeula, so to speak. This was the first step in the redemption and the saving of our people. I hate to say, I mean, you know, there are times you can forget, you know, who actually said an idea. After all, ideas are current, you read it in papers, you read it here and there and so on. But nevertheless, you know, we know that there are people who, they'll take credit for themselves when actually it was somebody else who already had done it. How many term papers have been written that way? Ah, but at any rate, if we can give credit, by all means, it's a mitzvah to give credit. Okay.
In our context, is that to admit the evidence, you know, Eidut Kabila, you should admit the third witnesses.
Yeah.
But then, in terms of giving weight to the evidence, that's a different story.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we had that, I mean, reference, I mean, that what is the difference, right, between witnesses who say, you know, that, you know, witnesses say that we were together with the person who was murdered, or we were together with the murderer, right, as compared to witnesses, you know, that they say, you were together with us, remember? I mean, in one case we said that they were not considered Adam Zomimim, but, you know, the testimony is conflicting, okay? There's a conflict in testimony. Whereas in the second case, definitely this would be Adam Silverman. So, the expression that the Gemara uses is the Guf Eidusan. In other words, you have to take a look and see, you know, what is the subject matter, so to speak, of what the testimony is. If the Guf Eidusan is that these guys were Adam Silverman, then that's it. But if it's simply that they contradict each other on details of where they were, what they saw, and things like that, then that's a different case. Okay? All right. To conclude with the Rashi over here and then continue with the new Mishnah. Okay. So, the Omer Karabi Yochanan, the Karabi Yehuda says, Ma'asisan, right? Now, Mishnah would say, the status, he's Zul, the Husakot Hasim. That, you know, this is a conspiracy, and you can assume, the assumption is, you know, that, this. Second group of people who is declaring that all the others are Edom Zomimim, that they're doing it again and again and again. So, In the first case, we said the lekha kol mahader she'in odem mechazer achrehem sochra, that no one is going to go looking after them in order to pay them off, that they should be witnesses of how gilam tamid lovei levezdin, and to get them in the custom of coming, always coming to the bezdin. Ulahazim is kol aboyim. But in the second case, with the woman, says the kol mahader, she was looking the bakish shalisko edi sheker. So he says, in the first case is Hani Yad Bisadusa. In other words, the first group, you could assume that they were false witnesses because of, you know, the assumption. But he says the last group that came along, Hani Yad Bisadusa, so these Elo Achronim, they know Yad Bisadusa Shonsu, they know about the testimony, and you know that they are there in order to testify. Okay, so now we start with a new mission.
I wanted to wait till the end to see if any reference was made. Are we to assume that Rabbi Yochanan solicited opinions from his audience when the case was presented before him?
It could be.
Because presumably Rabbi Lakish wasn't going to speak before his teacher unless he
solicited
himself.
Right.
So Rabbi Yochanan was being a bit, what's the term, ingenuous? Disingenuous. Was he being a bit disingenuous by soliciting an opinion and having already expressed an opinion in a similar issue?
Okay. I think that the answer to this, you have to go back again to Masachas Sanhedrin. Okay? Masachas Sanhedrin, over there, they make a distinction between Dinei Mominais and Dinei Nefashis. Okay? Of course, in many respects, the law is the same for Dinim Nefoshes and Dinim Mominos, but in other respects, you know, there are big differences between how they are handled, okay? One of the differences that Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin is the fact that in Dinim Mominos, so Maschilim in Arosh, in other words, you know, the head of the Bezdin, so to speak, the most recognized authority, he is the one who first expresses an opinion. And then the rest, they come in, they chime along, and so on and so forth. I mean, they're permitted to disagree if necessary, but still, in general, the assumption would be that, the Rosh Bezdin, being such a great scholar, you know, he knows what he's talking about. Now, this is Dinei Mominos, okay? Monetary judgments, okay? But in Dinei Nefashos, there it says Maskilim and Atzad, which means that you start with those guys on the sidelines. In other words, not the head table, but you start with the others, so that they should express their opinion first. And the reason being, as the Gemara itself explains, is so that they should not be overwhelmed by the head, the Sanhedrin, in order to, you know, that they will simply say, oh, if the head of the Sanhedrin says this, then this must be the case. They want the people, you know, to express themselves. Now, in the case of Edom Zomamin, if the punishment is Neherogin, then we are dealing, of course, with a case where a capital punishment may be involved. And in that case, that falls already into the category that Maskilim Latzad. So in this particular case, we would say that, Rabbi Yochanan certainly is willing to listen to what Reish Lakish has to say and what the Rabbi Loz has to say and what any of the other people who were there would have to say.
You know, of course, it couldn't have been a Matin.
Pardon me?
Couldn't have been Dean and a Fascist at that time and that place, I don't believe.
At least we're talking theoretically, okay? I mean, theoretically, the Bezdin had the right to do it. Of course, what happened was, you know, that there's another Gemara, you know, that says that our boyim shona lifnei chuvna bayis, you know, that 40 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so Golsa Sanhedrin Milishkas HaGozes. The Sanhedrin went into exile from the Lishkas HaGozes. Was a chamber within the temple. It was called the Chamber of Hewn Stone. Gosis, you know, is hew out stone over there. Okay, and this was the special room where the Sanhedrin met. So as long as they were in the Lishkas HaGozes, then presumably they had the power, you know, to condemn a person to death if he deserved it, naturally. But once they moved out of the Lishkas HaGozes, so they no longer had the authority to condemn anybody to death. And this, as we said, happened already, 40 years prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Of course, at that time, I don't have to tell you, I mean, that the Roman authorities, of course, were the political power in Eretz Israel, and even though theoretically there was a Jewish king at that time, but nevertheless the Jewish king himself, you know, was under the influence of the Roman authorities. There was only, you know, you have a few outstanding names among them. The rest were a bunch of, what shall I say? They never distinguished themselves in any way, right? The only two kings of that particular time, of course, these were not from the Hasmonean dynasty. The first one was Hordas, who was a mamzer of the first order. He murdered his own wife, he murdered his own children, and so on and so forth. But the one thing that they speak in his favor is that also he beautified the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe he had Chavrata later on in life for the kind of a life that he had lived before, so he decided to beautify the Beis HaMikdash, and they say that artistically it was so beautiful that people had never seen the likes of it. That the marble was like you, as if like a shimmering sea and things like that. It's a Gemara in Baba Basra that describes the appearance of the Beis HaMikdash that, you know, Hordas he expounded and so on. So that what we have, of course, today, the Kotel Ma'aravi, you know, is from the temple that Hordas had built, okay? So, but the other point I want to make about the Hordas is simply the fact that he knew how to play the Roman politics very well. Started off as a follower of Julius Caesar. And then, when he saw that, you know, after the assassination of Caesar, if you remember, there was a civil war in the Roman Empire between the followers of Augustus, originally his name was Octavius, okay, yeah. But you know, he took on the title Augustus, okay, the August one, okay, and the other one was of course Mark Antony. And each of them vied, you know, for the leadership. So Mark Antony took the eastern world, which would include Eretz Yisrael. But Hordas was very smart. He knew how to play him. And then when war broke out, actual fighting, you know, between Mark Antony and between Augustus, he played the Augustus card. And of course, you know that Augustus won and so on. So that, Hordas, or in English we call him Herod, he found favor in the Roman eyes, even though Augustus said that Herod's pig, he says, is luckier than Herod's son. He built also different kinds of places like the amphitheater in Caesarea, you know, when you go to Eretz Yisrael to visit, they still had that amphitheater over there. They have the the aqueduct also that would bring water to Caesarea and so on and so forth. So you can see, you know, some of the evidence of things that he did under the Romans. Yeah.
Just discovered this week remains of a temple that he built in Caesarea.
Yeah. Yes, I read it. Dedicated to, of course. dedicated to Abed Zohar. Okay.
Abed Zohar.
Obviously.
What a beautiful temple.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. The other one, who is a decent one, is the one who the Gemara talks about. And this was Agrippa. He happened to be brought up part of the time in Rome and everything else. In fact, I mean, he was friendly with Claudius. I don't know if you remember that series about Claudius. Yeah, and, right. And Agrippa, of course, played
very heavily in the book.
Right. Yes.
Second one, especially.
Right. Right. So, and he became very Jewish. He began to realize that he had failed in his Yiddishkeit, and so he reintroduced things that the other kings had neglected completely, such as Hakel and so on. And he came to the pasuk in Devarim, with the Bikerev Achecha Tosim Alecha Melech Lo Suchal Lo Seis Alecha Yishnochri Ashelu Achichachu, right? That you have to, if you're going to have a king, the king has to be a Jew. You're not allowed to have a non-Jew as your king. And he knew that, he was a descendant of Herod, and Herod himself had been born in Edom. It was the Dumian, as they called him in those days, okay? So Gemara tells us, you know, that the people then began shouting to him and said, Achinu ata, you are our brother, and so on. And, you know, they show their loyalty and their love for him as a result. All right, let's just start the Mishnah. And, yes.
I was trying to figure a case where a woman could call witnesses, and it could be a death penalty.
Yeah, there's no reason why a woman could not call witnesses to defend her. Of course, she had every right to do so.
Okay.
She had the right to have witnesses come
she's
testify.
Accused, then.
Yeah. Well, this is not a death penalty case that we're talking about.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
But nevertheless, whatever it may be, she had the right to call witnesses in order to plead her case.
Yes, I understand. But in what situation would a woman call witnesses where it's a capital offense?
With a capital offense? In a capital offense, it would be that perhaps she was accused of murder or something like that. So she brings witnesses in order to prove that she didn't do it or something like that. But this is not necessarily a case.
I couldn't understand.
Right. I mean, it could be a civil dispute with somebody else.
Yeah,
but, you know, she's bringing in witnesses. Right.
The difficulty, why did Rachel speak before Rabbi Yochanan?
Yeah, but that I explained. Right. But nevertheless.
It's a civil case.
Right. I see. I mean, it's a reference for the Gemara that I quoted to you in Sanhedrin. Yeah. But look, it could very well be that, you know, that Rabbi Yochanan, after all, if you have a son-in-law, don't you talk to your son-in-law?
If you can argue, you can dispute them. After all, it's Torah. You can
fight. The mother-in-law does. The mother-in-law does.
Right. All right. Let's just finish with the Mishnah, the new Mishnah over here. Eino Edom Zomimin Rogin Achi Gomer Hadin. I'll tell you. All right. We'll do this Mishnah. This is not an easy one. But it says that the witnesses who are proved to be Zomimin, they are not executed until the final verdict is given by the court. In other words, if it should be before the final verdict, then in that case it could be that they don't have to face any death penalty. Okay? Sha'arei ha'tzdukim omrim, because the Sadducees said, ad she'yeh horeg, that only if the person against whom they testified is put to death, then in that case, then they should be put to death, and it's proved that they are Edom Zemim. Shenemar, and the pasuk that they quote for that is Nefesh b'Nefesh, right? In other words, you have to life for a life. They cause somebody's life to be taken, so that therefore, if they're proved to be false witnesses, so they should. This is how the Sadducees explain it. So, Omer Lahem Chachomim. So the Chachamim said to them, "Alok for Neemar, va'asisem lo kasher zomim la'asos liyachiv." Isn't the pasuk? Doesn't the pasuk say that you shall do unto him as he intended to do to the his brother? The harei yachiv kayam, the guy, you know, the person whom they wanted to, who they accused of, you know, deserving the death penalty, he's still alive. So the imkain loma nema nefesh benefesh. So in that case, why does it say, you know, a life for a life? So it says yochol. We could understand it maybe that mishor shekiblu eduson yeyavagul. You might think that from the moment that the testimony of these Edom Zomimin was accepted by the court, at that moment they already become liable to the death penalty. So Talmud lomar. That's why the pasuk then says what it says, namely nefesh benefesh or nefesh tachas nefesh, right? Or einon erogim ashi gomer hadin. That this is only possible if actually the official verdict of the court had, you know, been established. But if the court had not as yet condemned the person to death, then in this case they are also not to get the death penalty. That's how the Mishnah is on
is
that.
Is this the Hoda'a, or is it actually the Bitsua? In other words, is the crucial time the decree that he's to be put to death, or is it actually when he is put to death?
No, we already learned that once, I mean, the court says that this person deserves the death penalty, it's already, it's bar katil, I mean, it's as if he were already a dead person.
All right, okay, that makes more sense, much more sense.
Because what the Gemara din is already, it's a different problem. because, you know, there is a difference of opinion about it. The basic opinion of Gemar Din is, as the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, it says that the court says, you are zakai, in other words, you are innocent, or they say to you, you are chayev, you are guilty. And when once the court pronounces that, that is the Gemar Din, okay? But it's not as simple as all that. All right,
let's continue this at five.
Yes, I said that the position of the tzedukim in the Mishnah can be justified on the point of view of logic, that if the person against whom they had testified had been put to death, then it's only logical that these witnesses should be put to death. And of course, what would be the converse of that? The converse, of course, would be, you know, that and if he had not been put to death, then in that particular case, you know, they wouldn't be put to death, right? But as we see, the Mishnah itself says nothing doing. That's not the way you have to understand. That's what we would call the Gzeiras HaKosev. What I mean by Gzeiras HaKosev, I mean that the law itself is determined by what the Torah itself has to say, and sometimes it's not something in accordance with the logic that we would personally follow. And we're going to see that, you know, on the basis of logic, you can come to some decision, and yet we'll see that logic doesn't always work. Okay? Look, on the basis of logic, we could also say, I mean, why, for example, can't we eat chaser or something like that?
Well, says you can.
But we know, I mean, the Torah said that we cannot eat chaser.
Says it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that we know what the simonim of the, you know, a kosher animal are, and if the animal does not have these kosher simonim, then in that case, you can't eat it. That's all there is to it. Yeah, it's a chok, exactly. And, you know, that's the whole idea, that chok is a law for which we don't necessarily have a logical explanation, but we observe because the Torah tells us that this is what you have to do, and this is what we mean when we say Gezeres HaKosev or Gezeres HaMokom. In other words, either that this is a decree from that the Torah gave, HaMokom in the sense of Gezeres HaKosev, you know, that the written text, in other words, the text of the Torah commands this for us, or is Gezeres HaMokom. Hamokim in the sense of the Ben Yishalim, you know, that sometimes we speak about him as Hamokim Baruch Hu. You know, like for example, in the Pesach Seder we say Baruch Hamokim Baruch Hu, right? Blessed be God, you know, blessed be He, and so on. See? So that Hamokim, why? Because so sages say, Umikomo Shel Olam, He is the presence of the entire universe, but V'yeinu Olam Mikomo, but the universe itself is not God. God is above the entire universe. So he is Hamokom. All right. So at any rate, getting back now to how the Gemara analyzes the thing. All right.
So we are where?
We are now in the middle of Daf Hey Amud Beis, and we've just finished that first Mishnah on the page. That's what we got through.
We're going into the Gemara.
Okay. So now we go into the Gemara, which is right in the middle of the page, where it begins with the word Tana. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, the Gemara begins by saying, Tana Baribi. Now, the word Baribi itself already is a question, what does the word Baribi mean? So, not Baribi, but Baribi. So, Rashi has an explanation over here that Baribi says, Kacho Yishmo. He says, this was his name. Well, that was his name. His name was Baribi. On the other hand, we have a place, for example, in Gemara Nechulin, where it says that Baribi really means, you know, like a Ben or Rav or something like that. In other words, he was a very distinguished person, a very distinguished scholar, and at the same time, his father was also a distinguished scholar. So, take either of them. All right. So, at any rate, what did he say?
Is it a name or is it a general...
Well, that's it. According to Rashi here, it's a name.
Rashi says it's a name.
Right. But in the Gemara and the Chulin, they take it in the sense of a title, rather.
Title.
A distinguished
Ben
scholar.
Rebbe.
Yeah.
Ben, well,
right.
Ben Rebbe, meaning
right.
Rebbe
something
Nassim.
Like that.
We would
exactly.
Interpret it specifically as Ben Rebbe. Rebbe meaning Rebbe Huda Nassim. We wouldn't take it to mean that.
Not necessarily. Could be somebody else's. It could be a generic term, you see. But meaning, you know, like a distinguished scholar. Okay?
But is one person always when Rebbe is mentioned in that?
No, not necessarily. Oh. Not necessarily. Okay?
The note here also uses as it refers
pardon
to
me?
The note here refers to the Rashi interpretation.
Yeah, right, of course. Listen, I mean, he follows Rashi quite closely, but at the same time, you know, I like to read the Rashi in the text so that we can compare notes and see. Besides which, it's very important to get really the feel of Rashi, to get a feel for some of the Tosfos and so on that we have over here. Okay? All right. So, here's a discussion. He says, Omer lo horgu neherogen, horgu ein neherogen. It's a very funny statement. It's funny, I don't mean comical, but I mean, you know, it's, he tried to summarize the Torah's attitude, if you wish, in a very pithy statement, right? So he says, if they killed him, excuse me, lo horgu, right, if they didn't kill him, meaning if the Edom Zomimim did not cause the death of the person whom they accused, you know, of capital offense, then they are rogged. Then in that case, they are put to death. Because as we said before, the answer of the rabbis to the Tzedukim is what? How could you say what you're saying when we see that the Torah, when it says, Kasher Zomam says the Yochiv, we're dealing with the person who is still alive. He has been put to death. Because we proved that you're a bunch of false witnesses. So that therefore, Kasher Zomam can only mean that what you wanted to do to him, this will be your punishment, you see. Alright, so therefore, if they didn't kill him as a result of their testimony, then in that case they are put to death as Edom Zomim. But what about Horgu? What if they did cause him to be put to death? Then in that case, Ein Neharogen. Then these Edom Zomim are not going to be executed. This is what I say is a gewaldic business. It's gewaldic. Why is it gewaldic? Because we would say on the basis of logic it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And so Omar Odid, so his father said to him, Bini, my son, he says, Lav kal v'chomehu? Tell me, can't you derive this basic idea through a kal v'chomer? In other words, if this is so and then so and so, you know, it would automatically follow, right?
Right.
In other words, in this particular case, we would have to say that probably the kal v'chomer would be, look, if they killed, shouldn't they be killed, and so on and so forth, right? So he says, so Omar Loi, so he said unto him, in other words, he said to his father, he says, the Maraton Rabbeinu, he says, you, my master, taught us, She'ein onshin min hadin. And here we have an important principle. What does it mean? Ein onshin min hadin. It means that we cannot inflict either capital punishment, or in the case of Malkos, corporal punishment, on a person simply on the basis of logical reasoning. You can't do it on that basis. Why? If you're going to punish a person, either with capital punishment or any of the other forms of corporal punishment, such as Malkos, or let's say even Golos or something like that, you know, in the case of people who committed involuntary manslaughter or something like that, right? So in that particular case, the punishment is not on the basis of how you derive, logically interpret a text, but it's on the basis of, does the Torah say specifically that this and this is the punishment for this and this? And if it doesn't, then you cannot ein onshin hadin. You cannot apply logic, you know, in order to know what kind of a punishment to inflict. Okay? So, the Tanya. And he brings a situation in order to prove that this is talking the case in the Torah. Right? Pasuk speaks over here about prohibited marriages. And if you remember, there are actually two basic selections that we have in the Torah, both of them in Sefer Vayikra, where they deal with prohibited marriages. Okay? One of them is a chapter that we find, of course, in Achrei Mos. That's the passage that we read to Mincha on Yom Kippur, where we have different statements made, you know, about what we say, Erbas this and Erbas that, and so on and so forth. In other words, you're not allowed to literally uncover the nakedness of, and it gives a whole list of different relationships which are prohibited. When we say the nakedness, it's not just, you know, to look at somebody being naked, but it means, of course, you know, not to marry or not to have any kind of sexual relations with, okay? So this is one passage. And then when we go into the Sedra Kedoshim, which follows Achrimos, again we have another set. And again. So, therefore, what we're going to see over here is that when they speak about, let's say, and they quote a pasuk from Kedoshim, so this they're going to apply to the penalty. But we also have another statement that says that you cannot inflict punishment, you know, again, the nature of capital punishment or corporal punishment or something. In other words, you know, for something severe. We're not talking about monetary matters. Monetary matters is a different story. But we're talking about this type of a relationship. So that you cannot do without having also what we call azhora. What is azhora? Azhora means that the Torah has to warn us that this particular action is wrong. And then along comes another passage which we call onesh, in other words, what is the punishment that the Torah decrees? And you know, and that spells out what is the punishment if the person commits a sin in spite of the azhor, in spite of the warning which he received. So that this is what we're going to find over here. All right. So we start first of all with a passage that we have in Kedoshim. Okay? Dealing with prohibited marriage. It's written over there. Isha sheyikach es achosei bas ovi vebas imo, right? Says, if a person literally takes, in other words, marries, let's say, his sister, who is the daughter of his father or the daughter of his mother, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now notice the language over here. It says achoso bas oviv, in other words, his sister, who is the daughter of his father, or his sister, who is the daughter of his mother. In other words, even if only one parent is shared by the two, by the man and the woman, right? Then already this is prohibited, right? So, of course, what is the punishment that we have over there? All right, let's take a look and we'll see. You know, in many cases, of course, capital punishment is decreed where, for example, adultery, you know, a man has relations with a married woman. See, that's already there, the punishment is a death penalty, right? Or even for homosexuality, where it's written, I'm not talking about lesbianism because that's not mentioned over here, I have to tell you. Doesn't mean that it's kosher, but it's not mentioned in the Torah, okay? But, you know, they do have a mention over here, for example, Isha Sheyishkav Zocha Mishkave Isha. If a man lies with another man, even as a person would lie together with a woman, in other words, they have carnal intercourse with each other, so this is also, it's capital punishment, okay? Or, if a man, for example, would have relations both with a woman and with her mother at the same time, also prohibited. Or if a person has, for example, intercourse with an animal or something like that, what we call bestiality and so on. Okay, or a woman, same thing. Okay. Then it's written, the Yisha Sheyikach es achoisei, right? Bas oviv vegas imo, right? And then it says, chesed hu, this is a disgraceful thing, this is a shameful thing, if you wish, as the English translation gives it. V'nichrasu li'enei b'nei amon. So what is the punishment over here? Here it's not death penalty, but it is what we call kores. Okay? Kores means, of course, you know, that the penalty is that they not only, in theory, are going to suffer the punishment of a shorter life span than they would have had in this world, but also they'll be cut off in the world to come. Unless, of course, they do tshuva and things like that, and Rabbeinu Shalom, and that's up to Rabbeinu Shalom's department already, okay? But at any rate, this is what the Torah has to say. So, Now we have this business of Kores, which
they
is involved.
Childless,
yes.
That's the category also where they're childless. Rashi says,
yeah, I remember, right. In other words, children. It will be childless, correct. Yes, it's another possibility, right? I remember you, right?
Often, they won't have,
yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Now, and of course, there are more prohibited relations here that they mentioned. But anyway, the pasuk, as we see, is over here, right? All right. So, Kores is the punishment. Good. So now they say, all right, what they're trying to do right now is to say, how do you know whether Kores can be the punishment simply on the basis of figuring it out logically from another person? You see, this is the situation, all right? And this is what they say. It says, Ainli, here the pasuk says only what? Elo, Bas Oviv, right? The daughter of his father. And the implication is Shelo Basimo, right? Who is not at the same time the daughter of his mother, in other words, only a half sister, right? Or Uvasimo, I added the word or over here, right? In Hebrew, sometimes the word and doesn't mean and, sometimes it means or, okay? Especially in the text of the Torah, sometimes it has that meaning, okay? Or the daughter of his mother, right? Who is not the daughter of his father. Again, a half-sister, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now the Gemara says, look, on that basis, Bas Imo Bas Oviv Minayin, how do we know that if she's really at the same time his mother's and his father's daughter, in other words, his full sister, how do we know that, you know, the punishment is going to be Kores? So he says, Talmud Lomar, right? So for this comes along a pasuk which says, and here the pasuk is taken from Achrimos. What does it say over there? It says, Ervas achosogi lo. The pasuk there says, you know, that he has revealed the nakedness of his sister, right? So now the question is, why do we have to have both? So it says, Ad shelo yomar, right? Until the pasuk it says, you know, that we have to have a pasuk specifically, right? Yeshli bedin. So I might say, you know, that I should be able, you know, to figure this out logically. Im onash al bas oviv shelo bas imo. If the Torah says that you have to punish him if he has relations with his sister, who is his daughter, the daughter of his father, and not his mother's, or Uvasimo Shalei Basoviv, or his mother's daughter, and not his father's daughter, you know, a different father,
mm-hmm.
But Basoviv Vas, right, Uvasimo, Loi Kol Shekein. So wouldn't we say, therefore, all the more reason that, you know, if it is his full sister, that he certainly would deserve Kores in this particular case? So let's put it both ways. I mean, they both deserve Kores, right? Mm-hmm. On the basis of Kal v'chomer, we would say, you know, right. If only a half sister, right?
About
and
it.
The Torah says, so certainly a full sister it should say that. So, holomadato, therefore, we learn what? That the Torah is not happy with it. It's not happy with the idea of meting out punishment simply on the basis of a logical inference. Instead, it only can do so by having a specific pasuk, namely, she'ein onshin min hadin. We're not allowed, you know, to give a punishment only on the basis of logical inference. Okay. So now they say onish shamanu. All right. So now we know, you know, as we've just interpreted, that in Kedoshim, the pasuk speaks about punishment, but Atzorim and Ayin, how do we know that the Torah has first given us warning against it to say that it's a sin to do so? So it says, Talmud Lomar, this is why we have the pasuk back in Achrimos, which says, Evas achoscha vasovicha vasimecha, right? The nakedness of your sister, who is the daughter of your father or the daughter of your mother, and Ainli elabasoviv shelo basimo. And we may think that it applies only to the sister who is the daughter of his father and not his mother's daughter, or Vasimo Shele Basoviv, or his mother's daughter who is not his father's daughter, but Basoviv Vasimo Minayin, And how do we know that this would apply also to the school system? So Talmud Loma, therefore the Pasuk says, Ervas Bas Yeshes Avicha, Meledes Avicha, Afos Kohi. That's why we have another Pasuk which speaks and it says in the following language, the nakedness of the daughter of your father's wife, right? Moledes Avicha, who has been born to your father, Achos Kohi. She is your sister, meaning of course she is your full sister. And Ad Shelo Yomar, right? And until the Pasuk actually, mentions it specifically, then in that case, we cannot do it on the basis of logic. In other words, the Kores has to be spelled out for us by virtue of the fact that we have these two psukim and the fact that it also says Achotz Chahi, that makes no difference whether she's your father's or your mother's daughter. If she is both your father's and your mother's daughter, then in that case she is your sister, and therefore it's also wrong to have relations with her. So it says Yeshli Menadin, right? Should be able to figure this out again, logically. So it says Ma Imbuzar Albas Imo Shalovas Oviv, inasmuch as he was warned that he's not to have any relations with his mother's daughter, who is not his father's daughter, or Uvas Oviv Shaloi Basimo, or his father's daughter, who is not his mother's daughter. So Bas Oviv Basimo Eloi Kol Shekain. Wouldn't we say, therefore, all the more reason, the sister who is his full sister, both his father's and his mother's daughter. So Hola Marato. So from this we learn what Shein Mas Hirin Min Hadin, that you do not say that simply on the basis of logical, based on the logical reasoning, that the azhara, in other words, the warning that this is a sin, is there. You have to have specific psukim when it comes to anything which is so serious in nature. So now we've seen that it applies to murder, and from here we also see that it applies to kores, right? And now they're going to ask another question, namely chayve malkios. How about people who deserve malkos? Minayan, how do we know? How do we know what? Of course, the answer is, how do we know that simply on the basis of logic, you do not decide that malkos are to be given, but you have to have a specific injunction in the Torah itself, to tell us that? So Talmud Lomar, for this reason, the Torah comes along and it speaks in the terms of a Gezeirah Shova, and it calls Russia, Russia. What do I mean by Russia, Russia? Because the answer is that if we take a look in this week's Sedra, next week's Sedra, Shoftim, and in Kiseitzei, we're going to find Psukim over there where we have references to both what? To people who deserve Malkos and people who commit murder. Okay? What are those psukim? So one of them is, for example, in the case of a person who deserves golus, you have over there Ashehu Rosho Lamus, okay? A person who is wicked enough that he deserves a